Hey, it's season two. Thank you for joining us. We're really excited.
Yes, we are here with, oh my gosh, it's been, oh my gosh, so much time. Not even so much time has passed, but a good time in between to reflect and regroup. And we are excited to come back on this episode talking about or asking a question, or is it even a question?
It's not even a question. It's literally, as you all know who've been listening to us, we like to drop nuggets. We like to shift your perspective. So the title of this episode is It's Not That Safe. And so I feel like we're just going to jump in because, as always, we organically start talking about our episodes and then we realize we haven't hit record. So why did this topic come up? Do you remember? Oh, because we were talking about safe spaces. It's not that fucking safe. That's what I said.
Yeah. Real talk. And just thinking about some of the work that I've been doing on both ends, just career-wise, on my business end, and looking at the revamp, thinking about, oh, I've been creating these so-called, you know, brave spaces, and which is supposed to be the not necessarily the opposite or more like an alternative space to safe spaces and what that means. So,
and just, for me, healing circles,
yes,
or group or coaching groups or group therapy or what I call just holistic circles, and coming across a variety of folks who have a variety of emotional expression, a variety of what's emotional tolerance, consciousness tolerance, as I call it, stress tolerance, belief and attitude tolerance or expansion, emotional or unconscious triggers. And the question is, for me, it was, what do we do with that? Like, are we going to tell someone in that space, we have no time for that? Are we going to clarify what the group's about? Are we going to hold space? And we'll talk about holding
space, what that looks like.
There's so many things that came out of us talking about this topic. And it was just interesting to think about how safe spaces, quotes, actually started, at least in the Western world. And for all you who may not know, safe spaces started for the LGBT community to make it an actual safe space to hold conversations and to share stories, to come together and feel supported, to feel seen and visible. And honestly, it was a form of therapy.
Yeah.
And also to find partners.
could have been.
Some of these were public and some of these were private. And then expanded. Expanded onto college campuses. We can go into that. And like what that really meant for college campuses and having a voice for students. I still want to feel like, I want to add accessibility.
Accessibility.
But nowadays I think it's supporting, I really don't want to use the word marginalized, but I think for the context of our conversation, marginalized groups.
And I think in the history of looking at safe spaces, it has been looking at for marginalized groups, right? Helping them to feel more comfortable in who they are. Because there, you know, there's a certain spaces in which we haven't been as inviting. Depending on, and for me, I think about systems of oppression, right? So thinking about which end of it that you're dealing with, if you're a woman, if you're a black woman, if you're LGBTQ black, like you have all these different things. So those spaces were really about bringing voices together who share an experience or have an experience in having something that might be similar, and coming and having that space to share and be together.
But what has happened most recently in the last maybe 10 years, right? So now our consciousness, okay, here I go. The human consciousness is expanding. We have an understanding of human trauma. We have an understanding of global climate change, social climate change. Technology has afforded us the opportunity to cross continents and communicate fast. And people are trying to understand and access their voice in a different way. On college campuses now, folks are asking academic community to be held responsible and to create strategy and outcome. So it's not like we're just talking, but it's more like things are happening. So now you see this like kind of pushback with universities among like groups that are forming groups and like who's allowed to be in the group, who's not. One of the things that fucking annoys me is, and I've experienced this myself, I've heard people say it, is why when there are groups formed to empower, support, and create a change in movement within marginalized groups, other groups get fucking upset that they're not included. You're not fucking included because you're not part of our fucking dynamic right now.
Yeah, I think that's a very...
And what's with it? Why are you upset that you're not included?
So, I think, you know, it's so interesting. It's so interesting. I was listening to another podcast the other day, and it was talking about the terms difference between womanists and feminists. And shout out to T with Queen and Jay, because I definitely do listen to them. And it was just very interesting having listening to that conversation, because I've had that in my head many times about, okay, being a black feminist versus womanist. And then being, say I'm a womanist, and having other women of color like be like, oh, it should be for other women of color as well, not just for black women. I was like, but when I think about the term that Alice Walker created, it was about being a black woman. You could be LGBTQ. It's the encompass of black women and how you identify in whichever way. But you were black, and we didn't have spaces. So again, it's like, what is it about attacking a certain group who wants to create a space for their voices for not being heard? And they come together themselves to give them that agency to do that. And again, being attacked left, either in left or right, right? So everybody deserves to, there's groups that, especially marginalized groups or people who do, whose voices have been silenced on many levels, ideology, institution, you think about it. What is so wrong about them coming together to speak about the issues that are impacting them? And I'm not talking about the ally, who's ally.
Yes, right.
I'm really looking at somebody who's really genuine about people having the right to have their space. If you genuinely really care, you wouldn't feel any type of way about saying or using the word, oh, you're excluding me, you're not including me, when you know you're included, but it's in different ways. So this one space that they're having to like flush shit out, let them flush that shit out. You don't need to be in that space with them. Just because you feel that you're an ally and you don't get the invitation to that space, now you feel some type of way, that shit's a blow to you calling yourself an ally. So what the hell?
Because if you're an ally, you're not, I don't know. Nowadays, I when I speak to folks who are on the verge of understanding their consciousness, right? Being awake and practicing the principles and values mm-hmm. of what it's like to be just be human.
Yep.
Human across human. And then the folks who are already awake and they're part of the their own part of the change, mm-hmm. right?
Yep.
I always say, if you're an ally, you're not waiting to, number one, have someone tell you you're an ally, and you're not proclaiming you're an ally, you just are.
Mm-hmm.
You embody it, not just in the spaces we commune, you embody it in your home, you embody it with the bigot or racist great-great-grandfather or grandmother, or friend or family, or anyone you come across. You're not hidden, you're not deceptive, and you don't split yourself.
And I would say you're not in, I have to add another
and you don't need to
there.
Be in and yes, sometimes you need an invitation.
And you're not I was about to say you're not and the word I was gonna is not invasive, right? Because for example, I'll never forget this early on when I was like 19 and I remember work well like yeah, like 1920 and I was at the a girls group that I was a part of. And I remember seeing myself on tape, but we had a conversation and it was like, I can be, so Asian American community, I can advocate for an issue on behalf, like in being like, yo, this is not right that we're taking housing from that community, that they're being displaced. I could support that without being invasive. It's like, I'm for it. I'm for you. Like, I have to show, like, being an ally is not like throwing your cheerleader squad, your outfit on, and then like saying, see me, I'm here to like cheer with you. It's just you showing up and doing what you need to do and being invited, and you're right, invited
without into a reward spaces without trying to perform.
Yes,
People get really defensive about the word performing.
Which makes me think, so coming back and thinking about, so now, safe space, right? Being brave, right?
What is safe?
First of all, safe is...
Safety, there's different levels of it. You know, right? We got emotional, we got physical, we got spiritual, we got mental, right? Yep. But when I support and aid people kind of break down these areas.
Yeah.
What is safe anyways? That when we feel it, we see it, like what is that? You can't because you there's no way yes, you can be safe in a vehicle by putting on a seatbelt, using a turn signal.
Well, you're cutting off your chakra, so I don't know how safe that is.
But like, there are people who think they can prevent car accident by following
all these different things, right?
Or mental safety, I put up this guard. Emotional safety, I'll stay in my cocoon until I'm triggered and I get defensive and reactive.
I'm learning that's not safe. So safe, as defined by the Merriam-Webster Dictionary, is free from harm or risk, affording safety or security from danger, risk, or difficulty, unlikely to produce controversy or contradiction. And I just want to say, I remember being in school when we were younger, like elementary school, and it's like, when you're defining a definition, you don't use the word in the definition to define the definition. So it's very funny that safety is in the word safe, which is still is like, what the hell is safe, right? And I think what's interesting is, it's starting to make me think about all these idealisms and all these things. Yeah. Like, oh my gosh,
language can be violent and harmful.
Because it can also not be necessarily safe. Like, it's like, and I get, right? So,
the question is
safe?
And the question is,
safe is
in
supposed
those spaces,
to be,
who is safe or safer?
Whoever the person is that benefits the safe that it needs to be saved from, like, you know, and okay, if we're gonna call what it is, thinking about social justice, think about those spaces, and when you're talking about white privilege and white supremacy, the safe people have always been white people. So when I listen to this last part of the definition, which is unlikely to produce controversy or contradiction, having conversations about race in supposed safe spaces with people who don't want to have that conversation
is unsafe.
That's unsafe. That makes it unsafe. And I think that's what is. There's this duality that happens. That's a sad duality. Like, oh, we want to be safe, but then somebody ends up unsafe. But I think the goal, not necessarily the goal, but in my thinking, in terms of healing circles, or you're trying to in conflict resolution circles, get into a point of healing. And so if we're not being honest, and the way we're delivering that honesty is in a way that practice communication skills. It is like, oh, do you want to be heard, or you want to get your point across? Like, you got to really check your intentions. Now when I'm thinking about conversations, whether it's safe or not, I might have a conversation with a white person and they might say something, and it not even have to be a white person,
right?
I could be a black woman having another conversation with a black woman or a black man or somebody else. But in any conversation, let's say there's like a piece of conflict,
yeah,
or differences of opinion, you want to create space, hold space, right, that allows you to hear without you also imposing some of your internalized feelings or thoughts into it to be like, nah, that's not what it is. Because we also create, I think that language piece also plays in tone for me, body language, so the nonverbal pieces of communication. We talked about this
yes,
before.
Yes, we have. Watch that episode.
I feel like that plays into creating an environment of unsafe or not being safe because somebody's not being heard. So is it really that the space is not safe or unsafe?
What comes up is anxiety. Anxiety is just a lesser cousin of fear.
Mm-hmm.
Fear is programmed by your beliefs and attitudes and your expectation of yourself in the mirror of another person. So when this comes up, it's you lessening the challenge in your openness to expand and understand and be curious about your own self-expression internally and externally. That is called expansion of fucking consciousness.
Yo, real talk, I think...
I do this every day with
clients. Man.
You know, I'm just helping... You know, let's be less judgmental, less critical, less impulsive to respond from a place where you've yet to even explore within yourself and also mirror that in real life.
But I think this is where, again, I go back to the underlying thing. If I'm thinking about that, I'm thinking about communication, your personal styles of communication, right? So there's a lot of, and I'm just going to call it, even for us, so it's not that safe. I think there is, and I'm going to take it from even myself and my battles of internalized shit that I got to like, and sort out, clean up the shit that belongs to me, what don't belong to me, what in looking at what really impacts my ability to communicate and how I communicate, all those factors ain't necessarily explored, right? So the self-development work and that self-work, before you even get into a conversation with somebody or something triggers you when you get into conversation with somebody, to think about how is it that you communicate and deal with certain things that you may not be so vulnerable or open to hearing because maybe you haven't processed some of that shit yourself. Right. So there's an anxiety. And I figured, so where does the anxiety stem from? Why have anxiety about engaging in having a truthful, honest conversation about something that might be hard to have? Why is it so hard to have those conversations?
It's an anticipation of conflict.
So
is it always an anticipation of the conflict anticipation, or the unknown?
So it's
of
funny.
How you could or would want to respond.
So it's
but
funny.
It's yet to happen.
Another definition of safe space, and I think this is from the National Coalition of Dialogue and Deliberation. It's like an environment in which everyone feels comfortable expressing themselves and participating full without fear of attack, ridicule, or denial of experiences, right? So
denial of experiences.
That last piece, right, denial is really big because if I'm thinking about, okay, what... And this is one of the group rule or group agreements that I have is no one has arrived. And I love that one because what it means is I think about intergenerational conversations where you might say, okay, this is a safe space for everybody to start speaking. But when you have somebody who has a different experience than you because of a different age or a different lens in which you're looking from, that also contributes to it's not that safe. Because if you're going to be like, well, I've been doing this for 20 something years and these kids are ruckus. And then you hear somebody who's in that age group share an experience and you just dismiss their whole experience because you're like, yo, that's exactly what I'm talking about. See, these kids are ruckus. It's like, did you really hear the story? And so one of the things that I think about in that's really important, or even history, is nothing but storytelling, right? Yeah. So when we're having in conversations, it's really these storytelling pieces that we're exchanging and sharing with each other. And so what's so sad is, we shit on fucking experiences based on I call it the perspective of power and privilege that you might be operating from.
Yes.
So you feel like, oh, well, you only been on this earth for 15 years. You wait until you really get grown and you know some shit. And it's like...
And it's dismissing that this human being, okay, has their own experiences, has their own development path and journey. And it's also dismissing their wisdom.
Mm-hmm.
I did not know wisdom came... Well, okay. There is that... What's that quote? You know, you get wiser with age. Mm-hmm. I don't know. That's we debunked that in one episode. I don't know. I think it was about, like, lies I shouldn't have told us.
Oh, like, yeah.
Yeah, listen
do
to that
do as I say, not as I do.
Yes.
Yep.
And so we debunked that. Wisdom does not come with age. Experience comes with age, which then references past experience, which is the wisdom. However, a 15-year-old can have a load of wisdom to bring you, and that wisdom comes from them giving you a fresh new perspective of what you've yet not experienced. And so when we think about people being not resistance, because I like working with resistance, it means there's something there to explore and change. Resistance in itself in that energy also means like there's something to be ready for, right? But then when there's resistance in a way of violence and words and language where it becomes harmful, we have another issue.
Yep. So as you're saying that, just look down. And so speaking of power and looking at these, well, in that insertion of power and that privilege and that perspective. So it's this little paragraph. Wise, I think this was Tim, the agent group impulse to classify. So when he's thinking about, so yes, he's talking in the context of like white supremacist groups or white privileged spaces. Yes. But I think about, when I think about power and privilege, I don't even just look at just white. I expand that to age. I expand that.
Everyone has a level of power and privilege.
It plays out in great amounts of volume. In some in other ways. So the agent group impulse to classify challenges to one's power and privilege as actions that detract from a sense of safety is in itself a manifestation of dominance. So when I'm thinking about safe spaces, and then we'll talk about brave space in a second, of being careful of how, like, even dominance might play out in that space as well when you being brave, because if that can be inviting to somebody who is like, well, I'm brave, I got the courage to say it, fuck anybody else who ain't gonna say their shit, I'm gonna say my piece. That can create a tension in the space that doesn't allow an opportunity to create openness for somebody to be like, you know what, I want to participate in this space that you're holding. What's the purpose of you holding this space? Who are you holding this space for?
Right,
and I think I think that's the whole, like, who is this space being held for? Even if you're saying it's for everyone, it's very interesting to see.
There has to be some sort of, like, foundation or mission.
Yeah.
Not a mission. I mean,
I like foundation, yeah. Right? A level. And I think that's what, in holding spaces, what makes it what makes a dynamic space is allowing, again, holding that space for different personalities who have different experiences to share in different ways and different elements without putting this pressure on, well, everybody else is sharing, you need to share too.
That should not be an expectation.
There is something about, that is very interesting, but it's damaging for me on some ends, because it's a call, you're creating isolation, and reminds me of like a gang, or mm-hmm. the word gang, right? Everybody's doing something, you're not participating, what's wrong with you? To be a part of this group, you need to do these things. After you just said this is a group for people to be set, this is a safe space for people to show up as they are within their capacity.
I'm just thinking about,
you have a group agreement that says you may skip, you may pass, but like, and you, three passes, you judging somebody you three based passes, on how many passes. Like,
is there anything you want to say?
Come on, you want to share? And it's like,
do you put that person in a position of performing?
If a person's presence, and I'm all about energy too.
Mind you, that's expansion of your awareness of consciousness as well. That's another definition. Mm. Is being able to notice another person's presence.
Mm.
The acute awareness of someone else's presence.
Mm.
And the perception of that person or something about that person.
So it's in, yeah.
So the presence in itself does not have to be in voice. It does not have to be.
No, it don't. And I think,
I do that a lot. When I'm just like, I say, I'm present.
But you can see somebody like, engaged. Exactly. Somebody who's engaged, let's say, just like, I think about having a class of young people. And I've had this before where, you know, there'll be one young lady or a young person, not just a young lady, but a young person who don't talk at all. And I mean, let's say I have 10 sessions, they ain't talk for like 6 sessions, and they spot talk in between. What's so very interesting is, this is why, like, you have other ways of encompassing feedback if you know, you're dynamic in your teaching ways or educating ways, not to throw no blunder or no shade. It's like you have other ways to receive and get feedback. If I give out an evaluation, and clearly this person doesn't talk, but I could read on their evaluation everything that they're getting out of the session, that is a win, not a loss. That's a win. You just gain, They may not have been talking, but you clearly could see from the evaluation that they're participating.
Right.
That needs to be appreciated or welcome. And that was just one example, because I think this example really is sticking to me, because I've been in spaces where, you know, you're saying safe and I don't want to say anything, or, you know, you said something about perception.
Yeah.
And I think about identity is how you see yourself, but also dealing with the perception of other people and how they see you. Right. And I think there's some pressures for me that comes with that, because in the same breath, it's not that safe. And then, right. Oh, don't care about that. It's not about what other people say about you. Right. But then there's this piece where you're told you have to include the perception that others have of you, because if so many people are saying this one thing about you, it must be true, right? Versus everybody might have a different way they've internalized a meaning about something they see, and they're projecting that, right? So granted, yeah, I could have 50 people be like, yo, she's an angry black woman because of this one incident or whatever. But if you look at the incident and what happened, do I have a right to be angry versus projecting a stereotype onto me and telling me that's what I am, when in reality, okay, there might be some truth to it, but you're in your definition of that and the lens you're coming from, that perception is completely right. Fucking off. So right. When you are imposing or trying to force somebody to do something, you are also creating an unsafe, not a safe dynamic as well. So, and this, what are our expectations?
And that is all, as you were sharing this, I'm thinking of the many spaces I've been in where I've been one out of three persons of color.
Mm.
And feeling,
I gotta hold the weight of all the people.
Just, like, automatically, there's this innate feeling that, like, my opinion is the opinion of the collective. Mm-hmm. That's not even in the room. Mm-hmm. Or I get a lot of like smiles or curious questions.
Like, what's your opinion? It's like a look at you. Yes. Like, what do you have to say about this?
And sometimes, you know, I'll be honest, it feels like, how would I put it? In my experience, it feels like I'm an exhibit.
So
it's very creepy.
It's interesting.
Like, almost like I'm looked at as a study in that moment.
Yep.
And they're studying me, but they're not processing their awareness of imposed. Yeah. It goes really, I don't know. I have experienced this as this person in this lifetime over and over and over. I've experienced this with my partner, with my children, with it. There's this experience of being like gawked at, and in this curious like puppet way, and then in this oh, they may know more than me way, and it becomes like pressure,
competition.
Yeah, it's just I don't
of
know
knowledge
how to.
Like a fairy battle,
right? And most and some of the knowledge may just be from experience, but it's like, oh, I don't have that experience. And it's like, and I'm not making space for you to feel sad about not having that experience.
Yo.
Or I'm not like, this is what's happening. What should we do about it? What should we do? I'm like, whoa. Who's we?
First of all, second of all, it's very interesting you said that, because it makes me think of a conversation I had with an amazing black woman.
And then it makes it unsafe for me.
It bam. So you know how, okay, like, as an example, term history, right? It's like his story. You know how black people's story is like a mystery, right? Mm-hmm. But I like to flip it and say mystery is my story.
Mm-hmm.
So, yes, I am responsible for telling my story. And there's also a back and forth about whether and which spaces and whom I want to tell my story to and
absolutely
share it with. And the reason why in certain spaces I may reserve myself and choose not to speak is because, one, I may not feel this is the right space for me to do that. Two, I may not be ready to open myself up and be vulnerable to have conversations with people who are going to ask probing and prodding fucking questions, because for them on their end, it's intellectual. They're just trying to gain understanding. But you have to look at the history that black people have
it's
faced.
It's always been a study.
It's always been a fucking study. and person. Then, it's always been a
study. And the study was, how do we then strip them?
Then, again, the rewrite of the story, right? So, again, I don't really, like, so I'm going to just call it what it is. There's been spaces that I've been in, and it's been predominantly white, and even a majority, let's say it's a majority white women, and they'd be like, oh, this is a safe space to share stories and shit like that. So, you know, you hear different things, people sharing their stories, and let's say I share some shit, and I'm sharing some shit on the perspective of none of you fucking people can understand where I'm coming from, because guess what? You're not black. So you may be a woman, but that don't mean you understand my experience as a black woman. So imagine sharing your story. Imagine sharing your story and then getting fucking told pieces about your story or asked questions in a way that's like, well, did that really happen to you? I just can't see that happening. Or dismissal.
Say more about that. How did you feel?
How did you
feel? Like, first of all, are you kidding me?
I just have to say, and like, I just, you know, I'm gonna use,
I don't know what it means. I don't know what you think.
I'm the inner uplifter. You have all these titles, right? But I also have spoken intellect. I have, you know, energy and all this other shit. I'm just gonna call facts, and it is gonna be real sensitive right now for someone who might be listening and take it offensively. It is what it is. You get fucking tired of being asked about your fucking feelings. First of all, I'm not on fucking display for you to, like, use my feelings to psychoanalyze my fucking ass about a choice that I made or just some decision that I made, and then you're basing it on some shit. Oh, yeah, well, you did share with me one time that you had this, you know, it was very challenging for you when so-and-so touched something of yours, and I'm so sorry if I... And now you playing this whole... It's like a cycle, some stupid bullshit that you could use to be, like, passive-aggressive in the future, or you say some ignorant shit to then be like, well, you are sensitive anyways about that. I should have known. Huh? What the fuck? What? Hold up. Run that back. What the fuck you mean I should have known? Where did you get that from? Well, the last time you shared. So
you
now,
what are you listening to? Now you feel unsafe even more because it's
I'm not sharing shit with your ass.
You're now trying to regurgitate in a different narrative what you heard about what I shared about my personal experience. And now you're trying to find a way to gaslight my personal experience.
Yo.
And to find the reason why my identities are shaped in this manner.
Yo, that gaslighting shit is beyond too real and savage. Cut it out. Don't sit there and fucking dismiss me.
And then be told, I'm not being... And then when you say some things, it's like, oh no, I'm not being passive aggressive. I'm not being defensive here. I was just sharing what I heard. That is not what you heard.
So I just want to highlight, and this is small, and I can just expand this, but I love this quote, Tim Wise. This country is never safe for people of color. Its schools are not safe. Its streets are not safe. Its places of employment are not safe. Its healthcare system is not safe. So I say that to say, right, that even in our conversation and we're saying, is it safe?
The systems that have created
it's
the
really
functioning
fucked
of the Western
up to
world,
say,
Western
no.
civilization.
The shit's not safe. And this whole idea of safe, I have to question who the fuck is it for? Who does it benefit? Because part of that not being safe allows you to remain in denial.
Yes, because what happens is you're staying in this cocoon. You're not confronting any of the paradigms within yourself that's created, that's contributed. We have to be held accountable
for
our participation
that
in
humanity.
That
internalization, right? There's that work. There's some work. Even in me saying, yes, I know things are not safe or whatever, there's still work in thinking about things that things you hold on to that you don't release or find a way to process. It becomes not safe for you. Not safe for your mental, not safe for your emotional, not safe for your physical. Hence, that's how dis-ease come about, right? When something happens, I know for me, if I'm in denial and I don't self-express and I don't express myself, I don't tell my truth, I don't figure out and own that too, right? There's that ownership of it. I have to take accountability and responsibility for my actions, and that there might be something I say that could trigger something in somebody. It's not mine necessarily my fault, right? Because I'm not the internalized feeling that you're feeling. Mm-hmm. But to acknowledge, like, damn, there was something that I said, and there's some process that you might have to get some work. I think some of that triggering shit is sad to say and it's crazy. Oh,
anxiety,
sensitivity, it ultimately
overload of sensitivity.
There is that, but it ultimately highlights there's some work we have to do on ourselves.
Absolutely.
And I think...
But we have to go back to that question. Who is this, who are we making the spaces safe for?
And I think...
Because here's everyone has to be held responsible and accountable. Yes, everyone has a different emotional level. Yes, there's even different emotional triggers. But if you're open and awake and understand what the space is allowing you to expand on your consciousness and your self-expression, internal and external, you build resiliency. Mm-hmm. You expand on your vulnerability.
Mm-hmm.
It leads into a more productive format. Are we going to talk our talk, or are we going to be productive?
I think action, yeah.
And the productivity has to be led by, again, that people that it's impacting and affecting.
And I think that's where... So I think there's the intrapersonal work that is extremely important. It's two things that's happening, I think, through conversation, communication, right? That I think ultimately impact, we asking the question, is it safe? It's the intrapersonal and the interpersonal things that's taking place simultaneously at the same time.
Yes.
Why is the communication theory slipping my brain, but it's not social penetration. But it's making me think about how co-creation, how we're co-creating our realities together.
Absolutely.
And I think in that we're also learning about ourselves.
Yes.
And part of ourselves are coming up in communication, right? Our beliefs, our values, what we think, how we think, how we speak, how we engage, all of that comes to surface. On top of, there's the subconscious pieces that I believe gets revealed, and I think those sometimes can cause its own internal triggers as well.
Yes.
Hence, and even if somebody's saying something that will highlight for you, like, oh, okay, that's a fucking red flag, I don't believe in that, like, hold up, wait, what? You think all dogs should what? Like, first of all,
right.
First of all, I love dogs. Back up. Like,
right.
So it's like, okay, you feel some type of way. How do you, wait, can you tell me? And see, I think there's so many differences in wanting to know and learn. I think that's another unfortunate. We think about intention. Mm-hmm. Who is it held for? There's people who do ask questions like, can you tell me more? I am like, for me, if somebody, this is so funny, again, perspective, right? After I've heard enough, when I say heard enough, if I'm really curious about a piece or want an understanding, my understanding is to come from understanding the person and their story, not because I have a hidden intention or a hidden agenda, because I'm not necessarily listening to you.
Mm-hmm.
I'm just taking in the information, running it past my filter of what I know, and then I'm shitting some shit back at you in a way that's like, well, that's not, I don't know. I mean, that's different because, well, what I've been through.
But that's not well, like.
What I've, some of my friends told me.
That's not being present in the listening.
I think that's, there you go. You named it.
Because if you're present, fully, mind, body, like, spirit in there, you don't have time to begin to perform in your freaking conscious mind what you're about to say.
So
to minimize that inner child, that firefighter, that manager, okay, these are all roles I talk about in my sessions.
Yeah.
That's in the back of your mind to validate and then calm your emotion.
Yes, there's a difference.
So when people ask questions like that, like, can you tell me more?
So if you don't like dogs,
I ask, what is it that you heard?
Yo, can you? So may I ask a question? I'm like, may I ask a question? Because you said, the dogs, did you have an experience, or did something happen when you were younger that made you not like dogs? Or when did you not like dogs? Because I love dogs. I mean, shit, you're making me think, like, I have a big thing with, like, cats, because I had a cat scratch the shit out of me. I'm like, yo, fuck a cat real quick. So I'm just trying to, like, I wonder if that's the same thing. I just never heard nobody say they don't like dogs. It's like a different... It's a different, and I feel like I'm more trying to inquire about somebody's story and who they are, like, and where they are, how did they arrive where they arrive, versus instead of me trying, I'm not trying to use how they arrive at what they arrive to justify, like, nah, you fucked up for arriving at that. It's some psychoanalytical, contradictive shit that goes on sometimes that makes it very uncomfortable, and I think that's what contributes to some shit. Not, you know, you're like, oh, I don't got to talk to this person. It's not necessarily safe, but I took a chance and been brave, and now this motherfucker shutting me down too. You can't even. How do you be able to receive and digest someone else's story or their experience without you internalizing their shit? or internalizing or having that like, oh, based on what I heard and I'm running through my filter, fuck that. Versus, wow, that person's experience is very, that's their experience, and allowing them to own that, which holding space, I'm allowing you just to be. Yeah. Do I have to judge that as, oh, you're not safe? I don't know. It's
so to, because we're going to end, folks, in a few minutes. And, you know, I always relate to my experience as the most powerful way I know how to be an expert for myself. Expert to recognize my own myself, experience. To love myself, to honor myself, and to know that I know nothing. I know nothing. And that I'm always arriving, right? So in this moment, I'm arriving, right? Mm. And as you were talking, and I was sitting, being very present, so I don't know how long I was sitting, being very quiet, I realized that my modeling of that is exactly what I do in spaces.
Mm.
I'm fully present in mind, body, and spirit to your energetical presence, to your wisdom presence, to your mind presence, to your language and communication presence. And as I'm simultaneously in dual mm-hmm. experience with you, I am then rechecking and assessing my own beliefs and attitudes that are coming through and feeling.
Yeah.
Allowing myself to feel them, be aware of that. So that's mindfulness, right?
Yeah.
Total body, you know, total body. You feel the jerk, you mm-hmm. know, you want to say something, but you're like, whoa, 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 where is that coming from? Oh, it's not that important. Mm-hmm. I always ask myself, is that important to share?
Yeah.
It's not, right? Hmm. And then what you shared about like really digesting and like it's almost like tasting, but in this profound, authentic way, someone's story, mm. not to take it as data or to be prepared to defend or to ask more probing questions that makes the person feels less of their experience, mm-hmm. but it's to honor and be genuine in trying to connect.
Yeah.
So if these spaces are for people who want to, I'm going to put quote-unquote, be brave or to feel empowered to say and experience and then do some change action later with the information, right, that we gain, the wisdom we gain as a collective, we have to feel and want to feel humanly connected.
Mm.
We have to desire that. Mm. And one of the things that, you know, hopefully we'll talk about another episode, this is literally streaming consciousness right now, is this evolution I've been trying to figure out, and I'm sure there's probably some other shamans, some wise people somewhere else, someone doing understanding this work in a different language
mm.
of interpretation, is I've noticed that there are groups of human beings who have forgotten what it's like to completely just be human.
Mm.
Like they had to strip the humanity out of them in order to hurt another Ooh. Group.
Mm.
And when you strip the humanity out of you, the functionality of the, you know, of what it means to, I don't know. It just,
because you have Android. To strip
it. You have to completely strip it in order to hate another person or hate another group, to despise, to genuinely want to oppress and use and gain power to override another group.
Yeah.
Or groups. To continue to marginalize them. And the only way I believe you can do that is to completely in your own being, without acute conscious awareness of it, disconnect from human.
Mm.
Human. So the birth of giving birth to that human, some point in your life you disconnected, or you've been programmed to disconnect,
because to disconnect, the only
purpose you have is to then do that.
Yep. Mm.
You'll have the last word.
I think on that note, honestly, I think that right there is, I think that's what we're dealing with, is a lack of humanity. and how that infiltrates everything we do, so to speak, you know, our intrapersonal way of making sense of ourselves and how we see things around us, and then the interpersonal connections that we have, and seeing where conflict or how conflict can arise, and the duality of perceptions and perspectives and experiences. And it's really important to get a sense of holding space for all of that again. And I think that's what makes that space with the humans, or humanity, mm-hmm. like bringing that humanity back, or showing somebody like, yo, you lost, you're completely, you know, you're far off on this. And have you ever thought about boom, 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 but holding them in that same space. So yeah, on that note, it's real. Thank you.
Thank you all for joining us. Season two.
One. Here we are, back at it.
Share with people.
Yeah, definitely. We are on our Twitter page, our Instagram page at ARCH Podcasts, ARCH Podcasts. Also have our page on Facebook, the Archetypes Podcast.
You can follow us on Instagram, our personal page. Yes. I'm the Spirit Sparker.
And I'm at Tiella Grimes, TiellaGrimes. And maybe for we'll see 2020, maybe changing that one more time.
Right.
Gosh. The inner uplifter is here. But thank you for joining us. We look forward to coming back on the next episode. So definitely stay in touch, stay tuned in, and hit us up.
Yeah. We're here. It's the Spirit Sparker.
And it's the inner uplifter.
We're tuning out. Thank you.
Peace. Welcome to the Archetypes Podcast with your hosts, the Spirit Sparker and the Inner Uplifter.
This podcast was created to share our eclectic soul and human journey, for empowering others to be visible, engage in deep conversations about life challenges
and journeys as we know it to be, through our quirky and raw soul conversations.
We will explore self-empowerment through
voice, visibility, and representation,
and illuminate the significance of
cultivating a practice for soul wellness.